Thank you for that question. I think that our schools, one thing that our schools do well is that they have their community nights monthly. And they, for the vast majority of our schools, they have a pretty good attendance. But there are many of our schools that don't. And the outreach might look one way or the other. So, meaning, for example, a school that I do enjoy and love, and I have students from those schools, like the Rinjav Upper School, for example, their parents' nights will have more white parents that will attend those evening events versus more parents of color. And so thinking about how do they engage more to bring more parents of color to have to feel welcome to have a seat at the table. And I won't say that they don't create a welcoming environment, but there might be some challenges as to why parents are not involved. So whether that's sending, you know, we're in 2019, going into 2020, we have great ways of like communicating with individuals. So whether that's via text, email, even social media, however we can actually tap into families to find out, you know, your kids are at our schools. How can we get you to be more involved? What is this going to take? Do we need to have meetings that are in your community versus having you come into our school? Culturally, sometimes schools could be of intimidation for
Yes,
families,
absolutely.
right? And so when we think about the families that we service, what might be the barriers as to why they're not coming into our schools and why we're not being able to engage with certain families as such? And so I think we just need to think a little more outside of the box in terms of what how our schools are, I mean, yes, how our schools are engaging families. And I think to Karen Mapp, Professor Mapp, I actually did a course with her and Mandy Savitz, Romer Savitz, over at the Harvard
Oh,
School
nice.
a couple years ago. And a lot of the learning there around family engagement, it really starts with just communication. And you really just have to be in a place where you're willing to hear the voices and the needs of families and think about together how are we going to address the challenges so that everybody can feel like they have a seat at the table. And so through this process, I think if our schools are intentional on how they actually reach out to families, I think they will have greater outcomes in terms of how they, so it's not just you have to physically come into a space, but could there be like a Facebook Live where a parent could, you know, if there's a PTO meeting happening, could it be lived so that a parent could be at home but still feeling like they're engaged and being a part of it? Maybe they can text in to have a question or what have you, but they feel inclusive while they're at home, maybe cooking dinner for their families or something like that. I think that we could also rotate. This is what I was talking about at the school committee at the last meeting I was just at, rotating our school committee meetings so that they're more in our community, so that families don't feel like they have to just come out to the high school to be a part of a meeting, but our meetings could actually go to them and maybe be in the community centers at different housing developments or maybe other forums, libraries as such, if there are spaces that allow it. I also believe that we need to provide childcare in those spaces, right? And if we, even if a parents have to come in for parent-teacher conferences, are we providing childcare for our parents to actually not have to worry about their 2 or 3 year, you know, a younger child and really providing their giving their attention there, but are actually able to engage with a teacher and learn more about their student that's in the classroom versus having to worry about a younger child. But if we provide childcare and if we're providing dinner, I think that these things can happen. And I think that that's some of the ways that we could think about the family engagement and the partnership there. Now, when I think about parents' rights and how to hone in on what that looks like, they're the parents of the children that we're servicing. And I will never exclude or play down a parent's rights to advocate for their young person or to feel like they can't be a part of policymaking initiatives in our spaces.
So a lot of parents, excluded, and not just parents from disadvantaged communities, but you have parents coming in who, you mentioned, advocating for policy initiatives, who want to do that, spend months of effort basically banging their head up against a wall. You going beyond a parent-teacher conference, there are parents who want to know things about their children's education and who simply run into a stone wall. And in many cases, parents are asking for, as I spoke to parents, especially of students on IEPs or of students of advanced learners, they've wanted to know why decisions were made or things about their children's education that they're allowed to know under FERPA or PPRA, federal laws, where they were simply stonewalled. Now, the parents didn't know their rights, but it was clear that their rights were being violated. So there's a gap between the school doesn't want to communicate with you, the school wants to communicate, but it's including some parents, and the school is including all parents. And we haven't, in many of our schools, bridged that first gap of the school wants to give parents the information that the parents want.
And I also, thank you, I think that in addition to that, we also need to think about our parents are an extent, are a continuation of our young people. Like, they are the fundamental, like, teachers in our young people's lives, and that they're, that they critically matter in terms of decision making for a young person. And so if we don't have, and I think that we need to think about what that open door policy looks like, because parents are going to come in, like, if they need to meet with a teacher right then and there, I mean, it's taken away from a teacher from their classroom. So, but how do we have hours, whether it's before school, after school, that they can be available and accessible to our parents if parents do have questions? How do we respond to emails or even text messages if that is the case, so that we can, so that parents who may not be able to come into the school are able to communicate with you? My slogan is "Together We Are Better." And I think about that as a collective, that we're not working in silos. It's not my child, your child. If my child goes to the after school program, the teacher, the parent, everybody should be included in terms of how we are working together to support a young person. And I also think about Aspen Access and IEP meetings. As a person, as a teacher counsel for the workforce program, I attend several IEP meetings because I'm able to advocate for the young person in terms of how they are in my out-of-school time program. And that might look a lot different than how they are in the classroom. And so how are we able to talk about what are some of the tips and tricks that I'm using in my space, and maybe how can that be mimicked in the classroom, and then vice versa. So even with students who are on IEPs, I have a few students who are high-functioning autistic children, and through that process, I've been able to sit in their IEP meetings, I've been able to really work with their families, and really think about with their teachers and liaisons, how we are really making a young person feel as they are having a robust learning in all of their settings. It's in the schools is one, out of school is another, but it shouldn't feel like us versus them. We need to think collectively how we are working to service our children. And so I think this comes back to parents' rights, is that I'm thinking about a young lady who just graduated last year from Ringe, who's off taking a gap year program. And because she was on IEP, she was encouraged right in her final transition meeting to sign the waiver to not allow her mom to have any more access to, like, advocating for her or knowing her information. And now we are in September, and this young lady is not participating in the program that she was signed up for. When mom calls to inquire about what's going on, mom has no rights, right? This young person's on an IEP, and now she's not being engaged and involved in the academic program post-high school. And to me, that's shameful. I'm really concerned about the fact that that the young child on an IEP was encouraged to sign a waiver so that her mom no longer has rights to speak on her behalf. That's problematic, because now we're in a place where this young person is not motivated, she's not doing anything, and mom has no rights to really be engaged or be actively involved in supporting her child.
So this is actually central to parent rights. And I hear all of these horror stories, just like the one you told me, they go in different directions. In some cases, a student with an IEP is placed out of district when they should be in district. In some cases, kept in district when they should be out of district. In some cases, an advanced learner is given things that are just completely inappropriate. And a lot of, I mean, I can just keep going through these, but when something like this happens, how do we fix the problem for that student? And how do we fix the problem for the broader class of students around that?
Well, I think we need to be open, honest, and completely transparent about what our schools can and cannot do. I think that when a parent is advocating for their child and their needs around the education that they feel as though is right for their child, so for example, if that means for this young person who's on an IEP, no, I don't want them to sign me off of their rights.
Yes.
Because we don't know what's going to happen come next year, whatever program they're at. You know, I think students on an IEP should have still the support of their parents and that guidance, because there is this clear black and white paper that there is some kind of learning disability there, and that this young person may not be able to make certain decisions and everything that's going to be maybe in their best interest. At such at their young age, even if they are granted 18 years old. So I think that that waiver should be thrown out. And then I think if we think about our younger people, our young students, and how we're servicing them, that it's all about, again, partnership. We need to have our parents have more of a seat at the table and be able to be advocates. But as schools, if we have a young person who is not excelling in our schools, do we continue to keep them on and or socially promote them, and we know that we haven't provided them with the proper skills and tips and resources to actually be excellent in their schools? At some point, we need to be able, as a district, as a community, say, we can no longer do that, and we need to maybe send them to an out-of-district placement. Or we think about what our schools...
If there's a disagreement in a case like that, who could prevail, the parents or the district?
Well, we need to think about what's the disagreement here.
What the district
is that?
Says
so if the district says, I can help, and the proven fact is that you have not been able to help, somebody needs to then say, that's not true. That did not happen. So as we have IEP meetings every single year, you know, from year to year, you need to be able to look at exactly where we are, where this young person has excelled or where they have not excelled. And so we need to say, are we doing enough and within our schools and with the teachers provided to actually service this person? Or do we need to say, we can no longer service them? I'm thinking about a young person I work with who is technically a third year ninth grader. He's on an IEP, but I'm like, he's a third year ninth grader and he is still in our schools. When do we say this school setting is not working for him? You know, so that's my problem. That is my problem with this school, is that now this young person as a third year ninth grader is no longer going to feel motivated to be in a classroom, because what are we doing differently to support him? And so this is the challenge that I have with our city, is that, and it's great that we're in a robust city like Cambridge, but if we're doing a dual, like our dual diligence is to make sure that our young people are successful and that we're doing everything in our power to get them there. And if we are not doing that, then we need to be able to say, we can't provide this young person with those resources, but we can find another placement for them to be successful and or hope that they will be successful. But we need to be honest about saying that and really thinking about what would that learning environment look like for this person to be successful. Is it that they need a smaller setting, smaller classrooms, more teachers in the classroom? What is it that this young person, do they need a one-on-one all day, every day? What is it that this young person needs in order to be successful? Because it's not just that they're being careless and don't want to be in their classrooms. It's something deeper than that. And that's where we need to be going, is deeper. And with our parents, we need to be working with our parents to say and educate our parents around what our school systems, what the system of the schools really looks like, and how much rights our parents really have to being vocal in that setting. So if a parent says, I want my student out, and and the district is saying, you know, no, I think we can address these needs by doing blah, blah, blah. We give it a timeline, and if those needs have not been met, then we need to think about alternatives.